Welcome everybody to the Game Buddy Funcast. I'm joined by Adam.
How's it going, guys? I'm really, really excited about the show tonight.
And we have John with us again tonight. How are you doing, John?
Pretty good. Can't wait to get into this console wars.
As you heard, tonight is going to be the 16-bit console wars, everybody. Super Nintendo versus Sega Genesis. And apparently, it does what Nintendo don't. So, first off, we're going to go by what we're playing. John, would you like to go ahead and give us what you're playing real quick?
Well, I am still attempting to play my way through Dark Souls, and I'm totally cheating by using a glitch so I can get like infinite souls so I can power level my character. It's pretty awesome.
That's kind of bad, dude. You don't cheat.
Yeah, let's talk about the moral and the ethical dilemma here, John. Like, this is already a game that like hates its player. Is there a does it feel dirty or does it feel good to just kind of totally cheat this game and just destroy it by exploiting
it? It feels really, really good. Like it feels so good that I don't care that I can't play online.
Well, you know what I think? I think there should be a patch to fix this glitch.
Oh, there totally is, but I uninstalled the patch.
Oh, way to go you then. So above the system there.
If only they still had GameShark so I could enter in cheat codes and stuff.
Well, just look at it this way. It's like playing Grand Theft Auto 3 with all of the... Remember how they always had the cheat codes in that where you had have all the weapons and be able to, you know, bring out all the stars, all the cops and stuff? It's pretty much the same thing, but even more, I don't know, like something that you're not supposed to do. But I don't know. I kind of feel like cheating on that game is... It's like kind of like, you know, you're the fat kid that got bullied all through school, and you finally, like, you go back at the high school reunion, you know, you're thin, you have a beautiful wife, and you're a millionaire, and everyone else is just a loser. It's kind of like a similar scenario, I would say.
I just liken it to just dropping the difficulty level. Like, instead of, like, having hardcore, you're just a normal level now. You're just casual mode.
Right.
So you're going to casual mode on that then.
Or it's kind of like going to a haunted house with the lights on. Remember that?
Well, that's definitely cheating right there.
So it's Dark Souls, Lights On Edition.
All right. Adam, what are you currently playing?
Let's see. Still playing the iPad games. I'm playing, finishing up that Sword and Sorcery that I talked about, I think, the last episode. And I don't know if you remember, but I was talking about how this game actually, it reads your calendar on whatever device you're playing it on. So if you're playing it, you know, on your computer or your iOS device, which I am, and it the game changes depending on the lunar cycle. So I can't complete the game until there's a full moon. And that's going to be, I can't remember if it was tonight. I guess I could look out a window. It's tonight or it's tomorrow night.
What if you just missed your chance to finish the game?
Yeah, how would you feel?
You just have to wait. And I've been waiting for, what, 2 weeks now? So I'm really, really looking forward to seeing the ending of that game because it has a lot to live up to since it made me wait for a full moon. But like I said on the last episode, you can cheat it and just go into your settings and change your calendar, kind of like people used to do, like on Animal Crossing. And they even tell you that in the game. It's really funny. Like, there's like this ghost of this warrior, and he's like, you know what? If you wanted to, you could go into this thing called settings and you know, move the date up. But apparently, you get some kind of curse or something if you do that.
So
I don't know if
that... It breaks the fourth wall.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what this game is based around, and it's really, really cool. You know, if you've ever been into atmospheric adventure games, you really, really need to experience Sword and Sorcery. It's short and sweet, provided you don't cheat and change the calendar, and it's really cheap. You could usually catch it on Steam for, you know, less than $5, I think. But it's one of the most original games I've ever experienced. The music is absolutely fantastic, too. And you could actually check that out, the soundtrack on Spotify, if you use that. It's really, really good. So I'm playing that. What else? I've been going back and just trying to complete a lot of my iPad games. I've been playing Beat Sneak Bandit. Have you ever seen that game, Sean?
No, I haven't.
It's from,
what's that game about?
It's like this really charming rhythm stealth puzzle platformer from the creators of... Do you remember Illo Milo? I don't know how you say it, on Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah, I remember that game.
Yeah, it has that really like cutesy, very Swedish aesthetic. So it's their iOS game. I don't know if it's on Android. It may be. But it's really, really good, and it's similar. It's not like Jet Set Radio, but it's similar to Jet Set Radio in that it has like a very distinct graphic style and really, really great music.
Speaking of Jet Set Radio, did you call that game complete utter trash last night?
Yeah, I may have. Yeah, I don't think it's aged well at all. I think still stylistically, it's still a masterpiece. But yeah, that game it's not very fun. Not Beaksneak Bandit, the Jet Set. Beaksneak Bandit's really, really fun. Has great one-touch controls, and you play it in portrait mode. So it's one of these great games I can play on my iPod, or if you have it on your iPhone. You can just play it with one hand when you're just laying in bed. You know, it feels really nice to just be able to relax with a video game like that. So yeah, I've also been playing a little bit of the Cave, the new Double Fine, which you have also, I think, been tinkering around with a little bit. I think we both played the demo. So I didn't know if you maybe wanted to sound off on that before I get into what I think of my initial playthrough with the demo.
Well, considering that's all I really played this week, I know I'm kind of slacking off here, guys, but yeah, I've been playing The Cave. I mean, it's all sorts of good. It's made by Ron Gilbert and Tim Schafer's Double Fine, so why not, guys? Has that Maniac Mansion vibe, some cool little Easter eggs to Monkey Island. All sorts of win there in my book. I can't wait to get the full game once I get paid.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought like it seems like it's a really novel take on the adventure genre, but just from what I played in the demo, it seems like it's like a tad bit unrefined. I don't know. The general concept of venturing down into this mysterious roadside attraction, I think, is really cool.
I like how the cave has a voice, too.
Yeah, in the talking cave, yeah, it is very intriguing and original, I think. But I don't know. There's certain things that kind of rub me the wrong way. I thought that the characters just seemed really lame. I mean, they just seem like they were just kind of, they're all just stupid stereotypes or kind of archetypes.
What they kind of went for, though. I think they kind of went for the archetypes on that.
Yeah, like, I don't know. They don't really seem, and you know, again, I just played the demo, but from what I've heard, there's not really a ton of interaction between the characters.
I think the hook in here is this game is eventually get into these areas that are character specific, and it'll kind of give more of their backstory into that. So I think that's what they kind of did there with each character archetype, and that way you kind of, you know, build what happened to these characters, why they're so messed up and everything. Again, I haven't played the full version yet. I'll let you know when I do get it.
It's definitely something I want to check out, but I don't really know if I'm entirely sold on having the multiple characters, because it seems like it would always lead to you always having to backtrack and like catch them up with each other. And it seems like from a design standpoint, it would have made more sense for it to include some kind of multiplayer in that kind
of
game.
It does have a multiplayer on it.
It does?
Yeah, it has multiplayer.
Okay, all right.
Online multiplayer. And really, it's just like Maniac Mansion. If you go back to Maniac Mansion, that was the same way. You had to switch between your characters, a lot of backtracking, catching characters up, and doing all this different stuff anyways.
Now, is it only two player, I wonder, on the multi, or is it up to four if the game?
It's three players. I think it goes up to three. Yeah.
There are six different characters, right?
Yeah, but you can only take three in at a time, so you have to do at least three different playthroughs to get the whole entire story.
So, yeah, it kind of has the built-in replayability with the multiple characters, I guess.
Yeah,
I guess that's kind of cool.
With all the branching pathways and everything.
Yeah, that kind of changes things, because I didn't know that it actually had the multiplayer, so I think I'd actually kind of be interested in playing that.
Well, that's only for online, though. You can do couch co-op, too, but you just switch between characters and everything, so that's why I get the gist of. All right, guys, let's get on to our whole meat and potatoes of this show. Let's go into the 16-bit wars, everybody. So, obviously, I'm a Nintendo guy. I have Mario tattooed on my arm. So, obviously, I'm jumping on the Super Nintendo bandwagon on this one. John, where do you stand? Where's your loyalty lie?
Oh, I was a Nintendo fanboy all the way. Not exactly for Mario. I liked some of their other games a lot more, but yeah. Super Nintendo, by the all the way.
Oh yeah, definitely. Adam, where you lie?
It really depends on what day you catch me on. I feel like I kind of go between, but I can tell you this much. When I was, 11 or 12 years old, I was definitely a Sega guy. I mean, I had, like, a Sonic the Hedgehog haircut. Like, I styled my hair to look like Sonic the Hedgehog. I'm not afraid to admit it. Remember how, they still have it? You could go to the mall and get, like, a custom airbrush shirt. Well, I had to make me like a Sonic the Hedgehog T-shirt, because that was like before Hot Topic. You know, you couldn't get a video game character shirt. You know, back in the early 90s. So I had Sega Channel, which was
I was gonna bring that up.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. That was really cool. I mean, that man, talk about like being ahead of its time. Like that was like Xbox Live before there was even a glimmer of the Xbox. But yeah, I don't know.
Dial-up modem.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, and it was a really good incentive too. Like, I remember mom and dad like being like really, kind of excited about not having to like rent us games anymore, or heaven forbid, shell out $50 for a cart, and when they could just pay that really modest monthly fee for Sega Channel, which I don't remember how much it was, but it was affordable. I mean, we didn't have a lot of money growing up, And we had it, but I love the Genesis. It seemed like really the big difference between the Sega Genesis and the Super Nintendo is that like the Genesis had like that coolness to it, like that hip edginess, in contrast to the Super Nintendo, which was still kind of more of a toy almost, If that makes sense.
If you go to their ad campaigns, that's what they were going for. They were trying to get that hip edginess, crowd with it, I believe.
Yeah,
and
then you
had the whole catchphrase.
Right. Then you had the Super Nintendo, which was a very, very kind of a clean cut system, which is ironic because it oxidized and turned yellow after time. And I don't know. Like the Genesis it was definitely more modern at that time, but it incredibly dated in early 90s now that you look back at it.
I don't know what you're saying there, sir. I still say the Super Nintendo holds up to this day. I still like the design of the system. I still like the controller. It's just a win-win situation.
Right.
All the right stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time when I had both, and I would go back and forth between – and that was really on a game-by-game basis, because, you would have, when they were duking it out in the midst of the console war, I mean, they were dropping bombs. Like, it seemed like – every 5 or 6 months, each system would have their own killer app, to where you would say, oh, okay, well, this is the system, this is the best. And then, oh, crap, Donkey Kong Country just came out. I can't believe how good this game looks. So,
yeah, there was a time when it felt like they were definitely going head-to-head, but I think by the time Donkey Kong Country came out, that's when Super Nintendo pulled away for good.
Like that and Star Fox. When Star Fox came out, Sega had nothing like Star Fox.
They had nothing they could compare to either of those games.
Right, but did SNES? I mean, did they have a Gunstar Heroes? They both had really good games. And
I mean, yeah, you could say that. I mean, what was Beyond Oasis wasn't on Super Nintendo. That was really good.
Yeah, but they had Zelda, I mean.
They had Zelda, yeah.
Yeah.
Zelda.
But,
and the Jurassic Parks that came on Super Nintendo were horrible.
Well, I didn't really like the one for Sega Genesis either, running around
really
the Raptor.
Oh,
yeah.
I was not a fan.
I haven't played it since I was 12 or whatever, but I really, really dug it when it came out. I mean, I was a huge Jurassic Park freak, though. But, I mean, it did have really nice graphics. I mean, I was that kid where it's like, if it had like really cool graphics, I was interested. But let's get into the controllers, because I think that's really important. Which controller was better, the Super Nintendo or the Genesis? But keep in mind though that there were two Genesis controllers. You remember?
Yeah,
that?
One of the six extra buttons on top, right?
Right.
Was for fighting games and stuff, mainly, right?
Yeah, I think that they kind of, they had to come out with something with six buttons because Street Fighter was so big.
They had a six-button and a three-button one, right?
Right.
Yeah, for Sega. Yeah.
Now I might misremembering that, but wasn't the 3-button controller like? Weren't the buttons really huge on it?
Yeah, they were like giant pieces. They're like really big Sweet Tarts. Yeah.
It just didn't feel natural to have a Sega Genesis controller. I felt more comfortable in the old, tried and true Super Nintendo controller, the 4 buttons and the trigger buttons up at top.
Well, here's the thing about the Super Nintendo controller. It was very, very, very sturdy, and I really liked that really rich, matte finished plastic to it. But I'm not going to lie, the first time I played a Super Nintendo, it would have been the Mario that it launched with, Super Mario World, right?
Yeah.
And I remember like it being kind of daunting that there were all those buttons. Like, I remember just being like, oh, man, like, I don't, you know, should I use this? Well, I think it was Y, where Mario would do that kind of weird jump where he kind of skidded. You remember that?
Talk about when he spins around and all that?
Yeah, yeah. Like, it kind of added, like, another layer of depth to it. But, like, I just remember being kind of like, you know, even at that age, like, really kind of preferring, like, a minimalist approach to controllers with just really simple, you know, just a couple
buttons.
Think
about beforehand, that stuff. Go back to, like, the original Nintendo. It's had the 2 buttons, the A and B button. So that's what we've kind of gotten used to. And when they came out with the Super Nintendo controller, that had all those extra, like, those 4 extra buttons to it, and just changed it up.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you the controller. I think that the SNES controller is absolutely timeless. It feels great. And the Genesis 6-button controller was a very good controller, though. Again, it felt a lot cheaper than the SNES controller. It had that slick, kind of almost glossy black finish that looked cool, but it looked disgusting after, like, you know, getting it sweaty from, you know, playing it in the middle of July all day long on summer break, you know. But they were both pretty good, I think. Well, I wouldn't say that about the original Genesis controller. That one's pretty terrible, I think, looking back. But hey, let's go a little bit deeper on the controller stuff. I think this is really fascinating. Which one had a better D-pad?
Nintendo. Nintendo always has, like, the better D-pad. Even in today's generation, it has that cross D-pad. It just feels so much better than the competition's.
Yeah, I would say 90% of the time, I would prefer that classic Nintendo cross D-pad, but...
Didn't the Genesis have a D-pad similar to the 360 controller?
It's one piece. It's like a disc. And I think that's actually because of copyrights and patents that Nintendo has on that D-pad. So
they
it was
do,
like,
right?
Yeah. It had a really like firm and but kind of floaty disc-like D-pad that I actually think I preferred for fighting games. So, I don't know. I think I actually prefer the D-pad on the Genesis controller. So I think overall, SNES controller, timeless masterpiece of design. But the D-pad on the Genesis, especially the 6-button one, was no slouch.
Well, I'm going to have to go with the Super Nintendo D-pad for my choice. John, looks like you had to break the tie here. Who wins in the battle of the controller?
Oh, yeah. I didn't really like the Genesis controller all that much. So Super Nintendo all the way.
It's like Super Nintendo wins this round for controller.
All right. Okay, all right. How about this? Let's move into who had the better accessories. Kind of a trick question, but what do you guys think, John?
Oh, the Super Nintendo had that that cannon.
The and Super that Scope, was right?
Super Scope, and that's like my most favorite peripheral ever.
That was really cool. I remember, did you own it or did you rent it? Like, I remember you having it, though.
Oh, yeah, I owned it, and I had that one robot fighting game. What was it called?
Battle Clash.
Battle Clash.
As it's called in Japan, Space Bazooka.
That might be, like, my favorite game for the Super Nintendo.
Sean, did you ever play Battle Clash?
I never had a Super Scope. I could never really tell you, like, what it was or, you know, how it played with. Like, I don't know. I just never had one.
Now, didn't the Super Scope come apart, John? Like, couldn't you take it, like, into separate pieces? Or am I making that up?
No, it was just one piece.
Although
it had, like, a controller as part of it, but no, you couldn't take it apart.
Yeah, I don't know why, like, I imagine it, like, yeah, like, you could take it down where it's more like a handgun. I must be thinking of some other toy from the same era, but yeah, that was a really cool accessory, and it had about I think about 12 or so games. I think with the Battle Clash games, that and its sequel being kind of like the high profile titles for that. But I mean, really, outside of that, Sean, what else? What other accessories did the Super have? Do you know off the top of your head any?
I'm checking it out right now. I'm looking it up right now.
I mean, the only other—I don't know if you could count it as an accessory, but I mean, they had that one, like the RAM upgrade that you could do for Star Fox.
Well, that actually was in the. It was. Hey, Sean, help me out. Do you remember what that's called? The chip that was in the Star Fox cart.
Can't
is it the FX chip?
It's FX chip. Yeah.
FX chip.
They also had the Super Game Boy. The Super Game Boy for the Super Nintendo, where you can play the Game Boy games on there.
That, you know what? I totally forgot about that. That's a pretty significant accessory, I would say.
And what did they have, like a drawing pad or something with Mario
Paint? Yeah, they had a mouse. They had a mouse for Mario Paint.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. So the plot is thickening on this. That was a really, really good accessory because that
only worked with one game.
Yeah. It didn't have any other games, at least in America. Surely in Japan it had.
Well,
more.
Japan, they had their version of the whole Sega Online thing. They had their own version of it in Japan, where they get on there, they got a Zelda game for it, like Zelda BS or something like that, and a couple other games where they had like voice and everything on there. That seemed kind of cool, but never came out in America.
You know what was really, really good was in Mario Paint, it was that Fly Swatter game. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That was so fun.
Man, I wish they would come out with like a new version of that, like on Nintendo's Facebook page, like, and you can play that. I think that'd be great. Because that was, man, that game was hard, too. And it's
definitely in the later levels. Yeah, it got hard.
Yeah,
it was fun, though. I remember sinking hours into that. That and, like, the whole music thing you had on there, that was fun on Mario Paint.
People still make amazing stuff in that. It's incredible.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so, yeah, the SNES, it had a pretty strong lineup of accessories. Moving on to Sega, I'm trying to think what their big accessories were outside of whole new gaming platforms. Sega CD, the add-on, the 32X. The
32X
CDs. Yeah, so did they have any like proper accessories?
Apparently they had a keyboard that went to the Sega Genesis. Like a full keyboard. Let's see what else. They had
Wait, couldn't you browse the internet on like the Sega Channel or something like that?
Well, technically, I guess you were on the internet, yeah. So yeah, the Sega Channel was an accessory, I guess.
Yeah, totally. I consider that an accessory.
Yeah,
I'll put it on there. Yeah, because I'll allow it. They had a foot pedal for like racing games. I guess that's for Mega Drive. Never mind. Cross that out. Not seeing too much for the line of accessories for Genesis, really, except all their add-on stuff.
They had the best accessory of all time, which was the Sega CD.
Yeah, but when you got all those things connected, and all those power outlets that thing took, was it really worth it?
You know, I remember being like a child, and you know, looking at the whole train wreck, which was the Sega Genesis, you know, expansion. And even as a child being like, what are they thinking? Like the 32X CD, that was a thing. Do you guys remember that?
No, I only remember I owned both the Sega CD and 32X.
Yeah. And I never had any games for it because I think that it was over by the time they even put those out. And
Definitely it's over.
And the 32X CD games were, I think, essentially just it was the same Sega CD game, but with less terrible video compression.
Right.
You know, because the Sega CD video took up about like 1/4 of the screen. Then when you spent an extra $300 on 32X, the FMV took up like 1/3 of your CRT.
Oh, I got another accessory for both guys. You guys remember Game Genie?
Yeah, that was they had those on NES as well, I think.
Yeah, NES, Super Nintendo, all of the old systems. Those things were like a godsend for some of those games, I remember.
Hold on. Weren't you just giving me some stuff about cheating in a video game a little earlier?
You know, I was a little kid then, okay? I have rights, okay? That was a little kid rights right there.
John has the Dark Souls genie. I think in that game, John, when you do that, like they should have just patched it to where a genie comes out and like gives you infinite souls and everything.
So did you guys prefer the Game Genie to, what was it, what other one, like something Shark?
Game Shark.
Game Shark,
Game Shark, yeah.
I only ever had like a Game Genie for Nintendo. That's the only one I had a Game Genie for.
I never had any of them because I think my parents thought it was stupid probably and was like, no, I'm not giving you $50 to cheat. Just play the game.
My parents were all over that. It's like, you can cheat. It's okay. That's how you get by in life is cheating apparently.
Oh, man. That's awful.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying. So here, have this and go ahead and cheat.
So wrapping up on accessories, like who is there a clear-cut winner? You know, you have on Super Nintendo had kind of proper accessories with the mouse pad for Mario Paint, the Super Scope, and then you had the Genesis stuff, which was God, I've already forgotten outside of the Sega Channel and
Sega CD, Sega 32X,
which were whole systems, What do you think? You know what? I am the Genesis guy on the show. I'm sticking with my man. I say Genesis because it had add-ons that were whole new systems that, looking back, were complete ripoffs. But at the time, FMV blew my 11, 12-year-old mind, so I'm going with Genesis.
John, you want to go next?
Oh, I mean, this is tough. If we are including Sega CD and 32X, I might have to go with them because I loved those systems so much.
I mean, it had Scottie Pippen, Criss Cross games. I mean, like
I'm sure that's what everyone remembers.
I mean,
Scottie Pippen, Criss Cross.
Sewer Shark is literally one of my favorite games ever.
Yeah, mine too. It's so good. Like, where's the sequel? I'm ready for a new Sewer Shark. I'm ready for a new Tomcat Alley. I'm ready for a new Ground Zero Texas. They were great games,
Those are the games that first introduced us to the Road Avenger and Time Girl. And
yeah, all of those Laserdisc games that came out like 13, 14 years before. Yeah, that's what's so funny about the Sega CD is that, you know, it totally blew our minds when we were little kids. You know, because, you know, as children of the late 80s, early 90s, we were absolutely astounded by any video medium that wasn't on a tape.
Oh, yeah,
so,
definitely.
Yeah, I think...
I'll give it to you there.
Yeah, little did we know, though, the Sega CD, it was mostly the games that we love were just crappy ports of Laserdisc arcade games.
But, well, that and they also had, what was that, Rebel Assault?
They did have Rebel Assault, yeah.
That
another,
was amazing.
Another crappy port of a PC game, yeah, that we just couldn't afford, and they wouldn't let us play in the computer lab.
But if we're including Sega CD and 32X, I would have to give the edge to Sega. If we're including those,
yeah, Sean? I kind of have to give the edge to Sega there too. I mean, way ahead of their time and not the best business practices, especially with the 32X. You know, around the cusp of like when PlayStation released, it was kind of a stupid idea. But so, I gotta give it to Sega. I guess I hate to do it, but I'm gonna do it. I give it to Sega.
I totally remember when PlayStation came out. Like, man, I was convinced. Like, no, man, if you have 32X and Sega CD, it's totally just equal as power as the PlayStation.
Didn't they have a Sega 32X CD games that you can get, like for like the that ran off the Sega CD, like or the 32X or something like that with Sega CD? Didn't they have like special games for that too?
Oh yeah, totally. Like, have you ever seen like a system that's set up with both connected at the same time?
Yeah, it looks like ungodly creation from mankind.
It looks like a transformer.
It does. It looks like one of the transformer bases.
But see, I think you felt like a pimp though when you were a kid, and you were like, "Oh yeah, you have a Sega Genesis. Well, check this out. My Sega Genesis has a big water bed that it hangs out in that has a CD attached, and I can play Tomcat Alley on it. You can't, you know. And I have real actors in my games." Even though they're like the size of like a Ritz cracker on the screen, it was cool.
But it's still cool. It's still the bee's knees, you know. If you don't have that, you know, you're not cool.
You're a loser. Oh, and guess what? You know, it wasn't enough that I had a CD attachment on my Genesis. I'm gonna put another giant cartridge that eats other cartridges in the cartridge slot in the Genesis, and I'm gonna play Star Wars Arcade.
Do you guys remember on like the whole bus? When we're on the bus, you have these conversations. We're on the bus, like. Which system was better? You guys remember that?
I don't know. Like, I honestly, like, really can't recall. I would like to think that stuff happened, but I can't really think of ever getting into a heated debate over which was better, Sega, Genesis, or SNES. Because I think that, like, I don't know. It seemed like a lot of times, like, kids that they either had both, or their neighbor had the Genesis, then they had the Super, or they had the Super and their cousin had the Genesis. So I don't know. I never really saw or really recall any of those debates.
Well, for me, when you compare systems like that, to me at least, it always comes down to like how the cross-platforms games compare to each other. And look, with Sega and Nintendo, Super Nintendo, like the only game that I think anyone can point to that and can say that it was better on Genesis is Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, but
they
here's
have blood
the thing.
Mortal Kombat on that one.
And, right, exactly. That's the only thing that you can really point to in cross-platform games.
I know I'm supposed to be the great defender of the Genesis, but the graphics were terrible compared to the Super Nintendo version, though.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they
but
were
they had
bad.
Blood. That's why
yeah.
I won, because they had blood.
But as much as, you know, I loved blood when I was 12, and I still love blood, like, that wasn't enough for me to get the Genesis version. Like, I wanted the better graphics, and I wanted the buttons, too. So, I
yeah,
didn't
so
have
you
that.
You didn't have to use, start or select or whatever to block.
But you would go over to your friends who had the Genesis version, and you would see those giant geysers of raspberry jam fly out of their nostrils, and you would get kind of jealous. So, but you know, those were tough decisions you had to make. Like when you had both systems, like I did, you know, it was a tough decision a lot of times. On like, what should I get this on? You know, I wonder which one's better. That was before the internet. You couldn't, you know, go to Lens of Truth and look at the comparisons like you can today. Because I still have that dilemma. When multi-platform games come out now, I'm like, oh, do I want it on 360 or do I want it on PS3? You know, which one's better, you know?
That's why it's it was so hard to pick games back then, because you didn't have the internet to know what was good.
Yeah, you just had to ask your friend. Yeah.
You look at the box art when you're going to the store and it's like, yeah, that looks nifty, guys. I want to get that game because it has, like, people fighting each other and all this other great stuff. And you get home, the game's complete utter garbage. I'm just like, wasted this money.
Going back to the Mortal Kombat scenario where there wasn't blood on the first Mortal Kombat game on SNES, like, I wonder what happened between 1 and 2. Because 2, of course, it had the blood and everything.
Fan outrage, I think, did it. Because Nintendo just caved because Sega was killing them in those sales, probably.
Yeah.
Because they had blood.
Yeah, I'm sure there was probably, like, you know, a lot of really interesting meetings.
But you had to enter a code on the Genesis version to get the blood, didn't you?
I don't remember. I didn't. Was it in the menu?
I think
you're right.
It was a menu option.
I don't know. That's interesting, though. I thought it was just out of the box, you know, like the arcade game.
I thought there was, like, an option menu where there was a code you had to enter or something to get the blood on the Genesis version. I had the Super Nintendo version, or I played the Super Nintendo version, so I really can't say, but I think there was, like, supposed to be a code or something.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Which version of NBA Jam was better? I don't remember.
Super Nintendo.
Was it Super? I think I had it on Super, yeah.
I had it on Super. That was the way to go.
So, now that we're kind of, you know, that's a nice segue into our next round of the Genesis versus SNES, like, just, you know, down to it, the games. You know?
Wait, first let's break this up in two categories. Best, like, exclusive, then we can do best, like, you know, cross-platform, you know, which one was better on, like, cross-platform-wise and everything. So we can break this up into two parts, I have a feeling, guys.
Okay.
Let's start with the exclusives, because we all know Super Nintendo had the better exclusives than Sega Genesis, hands down. It had Zelda, it had Metroid, it had Mario, it had MF Donkey Kong Country, and it just had great games. Secret of Mana, Final Fantasy was on there. Just better games. I mean, who cares about some blue hedgehog that can go collect rings and has a wussy sidekick?
You know what? The thing about the Sonic games is, like, man, I'm a really terrible defender of the Genesis on this, but I didn't really like any of them really past 2. Like, I thought they kind of fell off after 2, Sonic 2.
But Sonic and Knuckles, though, you got freaking Knuckles up there flying through, and going through and blasting through things.
You know, but, you know, back to, you know, the theme of, you know, Sega being obsessed with, like, putting cartridges in cartridges, like, that whole thing, I never really got into how on that game you put your old games in it and you could play as Knuckles. I thought that was gimmicky even back then.
It worked, though.
Yeah, it worked. But I don't know. What were the other really big heavy hitter, like, first-party Sega developed? They had Phantasy Star.
Yeah,
never played those, but people love them.
Yeah, I never played the one on Genesis.
You know what? You had the Sega Institute stuff, which was really interesting. Remember that? Comic Zone?
Really. Oh, Comic Zone. Yeah, yeah. Comic Zone.
Game was, like, freaking impossible, but it was really, really cool. You had Echo the Dolphin,
which was another...
Yeah, Vector Man was good. Golden Axe. It had good stuff. You know, going back to Sega being the cool system, like, these are cooler games. Like, I feel like they were a little bit more... They were. I mean, I'm not saying that that necessarily makes them better, but they were definitely, like, I don't know. It seemed like they had more of, like, an international appeal to them as opposed to the Nintendo stuff being, like, very, very Japanese, even though it had international appeal. I mean, obviously, we loved it. But, like, if you take a look at something like Comic Zone, I mean, when that came out, that was really, really refreshing and different, and the dude wore board shorts and had, like, a mullet with the sides shaved down.
And the rat tail.
And it had really cool rock music soundtrack, you know. Then also, look at Echo the Dolphin. You know, it was a very, very modern game, you know, at the time. Very different.
I never played Echo the Dolphin.
It was a cool game.
I still say it sounds pretty lame. That's something your little sister gets.
No, it was a good game. Like, you could see the origins of what they really accomplished when they made the Dreamcast. Like, yeah. You could see the ingenuity and imagination, like, back then.
And it had aliens and dolphins.
I don't know. I still say Super Nintendo, hands down. I said Mario just because it's Mario, and he's going through better platform. I say, yes, Sonic had speed and whatever, but still. I remember the whole old, like, Sega commercials where they try to show how Sonic was cooler because he runs faster.
And he has long hair, yeah.
With their blast processing or whatever. And I didn't really care. I still think Mario was a better platformer than Sonic. Let's see who has better games now. Mario still has better games than Sonic. Sonic hasn't been good in how long?
People kind of tolerated that last one.
Generations?
I think I rented it, yeah, and I don't know. It still seemed kind of janky. But, I give up, guys. Yeah. Super Nintendo.
Super Nintendo on exclusives. There we go. That's what I wanted to hear.
I'm caving. You win.
And better cave. As we all know, better games on the Super Nintendo, guys.
Like, they're not exactly my favorite games, but I think the best games for Super Nintendo were the Donkey Kong series. Like, I mean, they were beautiful. They played really well. Just weren't my cup of tea.
Great music.
Oh, best soundtrack, hands down, on anything. Like, even recent, I'd say Donkey Kong Country has a better soundtrack. They're just so memorable, the tunes. I hum them every now and then.
So, which had better graphics as a whole?
I think we've already...
Did we go over that?
Kinda, because, I mean, when we talked about cross-platform, we talked about how every single Nintendo version had better graphics.
Oh, you know what, though? I'm going to have to disagree with you there, because there was a game called Aladdin, which was made by Dave Perry, who later went on to create Shiny, that did the Earthworm Jim series. Mm-hmm. They did the Genesis version, and Capcom did the SNES version, which I have never played, but I heard is actually a better game than the Genesis version. But I would have to say, like, hands down, like, the Genesis version of Aladdin is, like, leaps and bounds above and beyond.
That's probably the one of Genesis' best games, but I don't think I ever played the one for Super Nintendo either. Was it a port, or was it just a different game?
It was a totally different game, because Capcom had the rights to do Nintendo games for Disney, so that's why they got the nod there.
So see, I don't think you can count that because it's not a port. It's just a different game.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
but it's still based on the same thing, though. You know, so really, if you look at it, it was like that. I think for most of the Disney games, going from back and forth that they did.
Because I remember that Nintendo or Super Nintendo had a horrible Jurassic Park game as well.
It was like an isometric, almost kind of top down.
I kind of dug the top down one.
I never played it.
Sega Genesis one.
It seemed like the SNES games were always like cleaner. Like, the colors were always a little bit more pastel, it seemed like. And it seemed like the Genesis had kind of a chunkier pixel density to it. But a lot of people do prefer the way that the shading was handled on the Genesis. I don't know. It literally had an edgier look to it, you know. A more pixelated look. But,
I don't know, again, are we counting the 32X of Sega CD when we're talking about this as well?
I wouldn't count them, because Nintendo really didn't have anything like that. It wouldn't be a fair assumption or assessment. So, I don't know. I mean, it depends what you guys think. That's my say on it. Yeah. What do you guys say?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I say I kind of agree, because the 32X 680 came out and it was more of a competitor, or tried to be a competitor, PlayStation really, than Super Nintendo at that point.
So Super Nintendo, they shocked the world with the Donkey Kong Country, with the pre-rendered, pretty high frame rate graphics. Yeah. And I'm trying to think, what was Sega's response to that? It's probably Vector Man, right? Because that had the pre-rendered.
That was around the same time, right?
Yeah. Which was a great game, but still, I mean, I'm sorry, Vector Man looked like, he was made out of Mountain Dew, which is amazing. Like, that by itself makes him cool, you know?
Obviously, I gotta give him out. I get Vector Man on that, you know? He was doing the do before, you know, a lot of the people, I think.
Before, I was consistently doing the do, yeah. But
it was obvious by the time that Donkey Kong Country came out that Genesis had basically pushed its system to the max. And there wasn't anything more they could really get out of it. Whereas Nintendo, they were able to still push the limits on what they were able to do with the system, with the hardware.
The Super Nintendo had really, really good-looking games. You know, again, the stuff Rare did. We forget about Killer Instinct, which was another great-looking game.
Combo Breaker.
Yeah. But, see, here's the thing, though. Like, I think someone could argue that the Sonic games look better than the Mario games, so. Well, our Mario World.
Yeah,
I think so. We'll leave it up to the comments then on our site and on RetroWare TV. We'll let them decide then.
Okay, all right. I don't know. What do you guys think? I don't know. Like, I honestly, like, Super Mario World, it looks good, but it's a little bland looking. I think Sonic, like, I don't know. It looked more graphic and, like, almost, like, more of a cartoon. But then you look at Super Mario World 2.
Yoshi's Island.
That is still one of the most gorgeous stylized games ever, so I don't know. Guess I'll have to go with Super again for the graphics.
There we go. Keep saying Super. Keep doing it. But, all right, guys. Let's see what else we milk into this. Let's see. We talked about graphics. We talked about controllers. We talked about accessories. Exclusives. Let's see. What else do we have?
Advertisements or marketing campaigns.
Marketing campaigns. Sega tried so hard. Wish I could pull up a advertisement to put in here.
Yeah.
One of Sega's old classic freaking does what Nintendo don't freaking advertisements.
Did you know the Super Nintendo had a commercial that had a young Paul Rudd in it? I saw that on I can't remember where I saw that online, but it's a teenage. Well, yeah, he would have been a teenager. Probably like a 17-year-old Paul Rudd playing Super Nintendo on a giant screen, and he has a chili bowl and a trench coat.
Well, with marketing, you have to give the edge to Super Nintendo, I think, because they had cartoons, and Nintendo Power, Captain N.
Well, that was a Nintendo time frame. That wasn't really Super Nintendo time frame.
Wasn't it regular Nintendo?
Yeah, Captain N was definitely regular Nintendo.
Wow. Well, I guess, yeah, they did have the power glove, didn't they?
Well, you know what?
They did have a Super Mario World one, though.
You know what, guys? Genesis had its own freaking channel called Sega Channel.
We're still bringing that up, aren't we? Still pulling that one out.
And I got Sega Channel on my TV, did you?
No, I didn't, Adam. The last time, I did not get Sega Channel, and nor would I want Sega Channel.
Yeah, well.
Now, did Sega con kids out of money by getting to call 900 numbers for help playing video games?
I think every instruction booklet had like its own number, didn't it?
Did they do that as well?
Nintendo had their Nintendo Power Hotline,
which I called a couple times. I'm pretty sure.
I never called it because
your mom let you call that.
No.
She just called it.
That's awful, man. You know what I always thought was really cool, and I don't know if it may have been on the GameCube, but remember how like on the Nintendo systems, on the back of the console, it would have need repairs. Here's our number, and it would have like a little Mario, right? Almost like a little, and he has a little.
He has like a toolkit or whatever.
Yeah, isn't that cool? Yeah, I wonder if they still is that on the Wii U. Look under it real quick, Sean.
I don't feel like pulling it up from my TV, man. It's really too much work. Too much work right there.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Adam! I just was doing some searching. I was searching for Blackthorn, and I found out there's actually a 32X version of Blackthorn,
which probably isn't even as good as the PC version of Blackthorn.
Probably not.
What do you think, Blizzard? Like, they even remember Blackthorn enough to like make a new one?
No.
No. Golly. They're too deeply entrenched in their three main series right now: in Warcraft, StarCraft, and Diablo.
Well, I think they're only three series, aren't they? Do they have any other franchises that they're currently developing?
Well, they have Titan, which is another MMO they're working on, but we don't know anything about it.
Which is set in the world of Blackthorn. You heard it here first, folks.
He doesn't like to take credit for it, guys. Don't worry.
Yeah. So do they – I wonder if they even make any references to that, though, in any of their – because I don't play any of that crap. I mean, I don't play any of that stuff.
It's not crap. I have a level 90 panda mage, and he's awesome.
Yeah, you're probably being serious too, right?
I am actually being serious. I haven't played in like months though, so I really can't say. Heard it here first, guys. Blackthorn. That's Titans. That's what Titans are gonna be.
That would be amazing. I would go out and buy it.
What was what was it? What was that game? Anyways, what was it about?
Blackthorn.
Yeah, what was it? Well, pretty much, give me the description of Blackthorn.
You were a prince that looked like Glenn Danzig, and you had a shotgun. You're a space prince with a shotgun.
Well, it's supposed to be like a shooter MMO, so you never know.
And you kill and you shot orcs. Basically, that was the gist.
Man, what does Blizzard have against the orcs? I don't know. They just have something against them, I guess.
What did Tolkien have against the orcs?
Well, Tolkien was it was okay in his time frame because he had hobbits. That was the counterbalance to orcs. So, yeah, we're gonna leave that. We're gonna leave that in there. Let's see. What else can we say about the Sega Genesis and the Super NES?
The one thing I really liked about Super Nintendo is how many of the titles had Super in the title. Like, yeah. I really dug that.
Bunch of them right there.
And they still, to this day, Nintendo brands things that way.
Like, I love the Super Star Wars series. Super Star Wars, Super Empire Strikes Back, Super Return of the Jedi.
Super Adventure Island, guys. We got the Hudson Bee.
See, I forgot that it wasn't just Nintendo, the first party, that did it. Everyone did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Because it was Super, guys. Come on. It was Super. It was better than Nintendo. It was Super Nintendo.
You know, with the Wii U, they kind of did something similar with the zombie U.
New Super Mario Brothers U. Let's see, what else do they have with the U on it? Probably a bunch of them. So they did that with, they did have Nintendo 64. They had a bunch of games with 64 at the end. It's kind of their marketing campaign, I think.
Yeah, and they're still doing it to an extent. Did they? Now, the Wii, not so much, because, I don't know. I think
it's a stupid name.
After the first year, I think even Nintendo was like that. That was a really dumb name.
But they kept it. Why'd they keep it?
Well, I mean, it worked out pretty well for them. Now, was it their new Super Mario Brothers? It was called New Super Mario Brothers Wii, right?
Yeah, it was. They did.
Was it actually in the title?
Yeah, it was.
It was okay.
They had one for the DS, the New Super Mario Brothers for the DS. Mm. So I'm pretty sure they didn't want to get confused with that. So I guess it had Wii after it.
And then you had Wii Sports, Wii Play.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm just gonna go and say Super Nintendo won, guys. Sorry if you're a Sega fan. If you get butthurt, just leave it in the comments.
Yeah.
We'll let you know how we really feel.
I mean, obviously they won. They're the only one still in the hardware business.
Oh, Sega. Ooh. That was circumstantial right there. Dreamcast was way before its time.
Oh man. Don't
We're not getting into that one tonight. We'll talk about that on another show.
Don't get me started on Shenmue 3. Well, Shenmue 2 didn't even come out in America on
Dreamcast. It did. It came
on Dreamcast.
Xbox. It came out on Xbox.
You had to buy an Xbox if you wanted to finish it.
I had an Xbox. Didn't you have an Xbox?
Well, you know what? I didn't. I had one, but I didn't buy it for Shenmue 2 because guess what? I imported the European version.
Oh, are we just good at the game then?
Ooh. It didn't have the sweet dub, though, that the first Shenmue had. I actually really liked the English dub they did on that. It was pretty good.
The cheesy,
it was like a kung fu movie dub, yeah.
But yeah, we're going to give that to Sega. But let's talk about some things going on in gaming news, guys. We can go and throw that in the box in this show.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Because we had some interesting announcements from Nintendo. THQ went under. A lot of good juicy stuff happened over the week, right? We got some Dewey news with the whole THQ going under and Nintendo's big announcements. And even some movie news with J.J. Abrams switching over to The Force.
Oh, we're a movie podcast now. Sweet.
But we're going to mention it because, you know, Star Wars, that's going to be a game, okay? They're going to make a game off of the new trilogy, I'm sure.
They're making a new Star Trek game. For the new Star Trek movie.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I don't know about it yet.
Well, last time I heard it uses the PlayStation Move, which I actually have one of those in my house.
You actually kept it?
Yeah, begging to use for a stand-in for a Star Trek phaser, so I'm holding on to it for that.
Surprised you actually held on to that thing. I was not a fan of the PlayStation Move or Kinect, so yeah. Don't see how that worked out. Glad somebody still has one. So
what were you guys' thoughts on J.J. Abrams switching franchises?
Well, I don't really think he's switching. He's just kind of doing them simultaneously, right? I mean, I'm assuming that he'll be somehow connected to the third Star Trek movie.
They say he might be a producer on it. I read on IGN today. He might still be a producer on it, at least.
Yeah.
Like, he's made a couple of good movies, but I'm just not that hyped about him going to Star Wars. But maybe it's because I'm a Trekker or Trekkie or whatever, and I just don't think that you should jump.
Hey, Trekkie's derogatory at this point.
But I just think something's odd about swapping franchises like that and just going back and forth.
There's something
wrong about it.
It's a nerd party foul. You don't do that. It's something you don't do.
Here's the thing, though, like, what's exciting is that we know that going by his track record, like, I never was a big fan of his television stuff. I don't really watch TV. No knock against Lost or Alias, didn't he do that? But
yeah.
I think, like, if you look at his movie career, every one of his movies is pretty competent. And I would say most of them are actually quite good.
Well,
so,
the two that he's done, hasn't he only done two?
Well, he did Mission Impossible 3, which I thought was great.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. What did he do?
And Star Wars.
Well, he
Star
went
Trek.
Was
Star
Trek,
Trek right.
His next movie after that?
Yeah, he's only directed two movies.
Yeah, Star Trek 09. It came out in 09, right?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. I thought it was terrific. I'm a very, very casual Star Trek fan.
You liked it because it wasn't really a Star Trek movie.
Exactly. It was made for guys like me.
It was a Star Wars movie. It was a Star Wars movie. That's what it was.
So, and you know what? I remember, like, leaving the theater after watching Star Trek and saying, oh man, they should have got him to do the new Star Wars stuff. I think he'd be really cut out for it. So,
well,
I don't know.
We're going to have another good trilogy. Yeah. Way to go, Oz.
Also, Super 8, you know, it was a... I wouldn't say it was a great movie, but it did a lot of interesting things pretty well. And I don't really think it gets enough credit for what it did. But I don't know. I think he's cool.
I'm just going to say Ben Affleck could have done a good job with it.
Ben Affleck.
And they say he was second pick, too, which just blows me away that I don't get it. I don't get what's so great about him.
He's an average actor that's going to be a good director, apparently.
I mean, he must have, like, saved, like, all of Hollywood. They must have had, like, remember in Batman Returns when all the adults were at the gala ball and all their children were kidnapped by the Penguin? I think someone did that to everyone in Hollywood, like, last Oscar night, and Ben Affleck, like, swooped in and saved all their kids. So they're kind of repaying him by making him out to be this genius director.
So Ben Affleck's Batman?
Yeah, maybe.
Anyways, let's go into the THQ bankruptcy and auction that went on. Auctioned off a bunch of their properties.
Yeah, that really made me sad.
Franchises going all over the place. Still more to be seen.
Who got the 50 Cent IP? Who's making Blood on the Sand 2?
Nobody. It's not going to happen, man. They're not going to make another... Because 50 Cent hasn't made anything great since
Blood on the Sand.
It's like 2008.
Sir, have you played Blood on the Sand? It's a great game.
No, I have not played it, Adam.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about
it. Well, you know, I have a copy. I'm literally looking at it right now. You could borrow it. You could see that it's actually a hilariously put together, competent third person, above average, I would even say. It's better than Spec Ops. I'll say that much. Has a deeper storyline.
Well, I guess you're going to see him trying to get his bling back then.
Yeah, you know, 50 Cent owns 50 Cent IP, I would imagine. So maybe he'll go to, like, Platinum Games and he'll see their name and be like, ooh, Platinum, I like the sound of that. They're going to make my next shooter game.
Platinum Games do the next 50 Cent game.
Yeah.
I don't think 50 Cent has the money to make another game, for one. So yeah.
His acting career didn't really seem to take off. But
his acting and his music career is pretty much down right now. Yeah.
That was really – 50 Cent was the only IP that I really cared about. The big ones went to Ubisoft, right?
Yeah, well, the big ones did. Let's see what – let me pull this up real quick and see where again.
Koch bought Volition.
Who are they, by the way? I went to their site and I couldn't even tell by browsing their actual site what they do. So – but they got the Saints Row guys, right?
Because they paid, I guess, they bid $23 million, where the next highest bidder was $5 million, which was Ubisoft.
I honestly am really surprised that Ubisoft didn't get them. I guess they only were allowing themselves the splurge, you know, on so much.
Is Company of Heroes a really big game? Because Sega bought that, bought Relic for $26
million. I know that the team that makes Darksiders, I saw that Platinum Games was on Twitter expressing that they were kind of somewhat interested, maybe, you know, buying their stuff and working with them, which I thought was interesting.
But the developer that made Darksiders, I guess, didn't even find a buyer.
Right. I think that's why Platinum was tweeting. They were just kind of like, oh, man, that's surprising. We may have to look into working with them. So maybe they're trying to expand, trying to get maybe a Western office together. So, yeah, that really surprised me because those games are, like, somewhat popular in review. Well, I know the first one was very popular.
They got a lot of hype, too. I think more hype than what they deserve, but they get the hype.
I'm guessing they're a relatively young studio, and they didn't have a ton of IP. Maybe that's why no one really wanted to shell out too much for them. Who got SpongeBob? That was THQ.
That was THQ. I don't know. Yeah. Some of the stuff hasn't been picked up yet. There's going to be another auction for their stuff that they're not currently working on or something like that. And that should be
It looks like Koch Media is the owner of Deep Silver.
Yeah. What did Deep Silver make again?
Dead Island.
Oh, Dead Island, yeah. That new one's coming out soon, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, the one that comes with that really, really sweet bust statue.
that's getting taken away, yeah. Fan outrage all over the place.
Sean, you're probably not going to believe this, but me and John know of someone that was actually, like, not even being funny, outraged about that because they were so excited to get this cheap, chintzy bust of a mutilated bikini chick. We actually know someone that was, like, excited about that.
Did you squee all over the place?
I guess, like, I just didn't see it in my Facebook feed. But when I just kind of jokingly posted on my Facebook about that, this guy, he said, "Did you see my post?" And I looked through his Facebook, and like a couple weeks before, he was like, "Man, look at this sweet pre-order thing. I can't wait to get my hands on it."
Oh, man, there's so many shades of wrong with that. I'm not going to touch it.
But the thing is, you know those have already been made. They've got to be somewhere.
They're going to get buried with the E.T. game.
And I'm going to dig up both of those giant holes in the – this. What is that? Is it Nevada in the middle of the desert?
Yeah, middle of the desert. Yeah. Nevada, going to go dig up the E.T. games and sell them.
Yeah. Well, I care more about these mutilated bikini girl statues. You know, I'm going to have those, like, right when you walk into my house, there's just going to be a whole wall of these
mutilated bikini chicks.
Yeah. You know, when I bring
I can't wait to see that. I can't wait to see that when we go to Portland.
That's for the ladies, you know. When they come over, you know, for, you know, wine and dinner, I'm going to say, see these beautiful works of art? I dug these up in the middle of the desert, you know. They were actually throwing these away, you know.
That'd be something right there.
But you know what? Like, going back to our acquaintance that I was talking about, who was excited for that. You know what? Like, if you're a horror movie freak like this guy is, you know, that wouldn't be that weird to have that, like, on your DVD case with, like, your Jason mask and your
Freddy glove. He has plenty of stuff like that.
Yeah, so that's kind of why I was a bit irritated by all of the
they should have did a his and hers one. Had a male freaking under torso do a his and hers. Then it might not have been so offensive.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Like, why does everyone jump to conclusions? Like, maybe that is a man that had breast implants.
Could have been. He has no head.
And a very understated genitalia, you know, that doesn't, you know, extrude from the teeny bikini.
That's why when you get the his and hers, you combine them together. And therefore, you have the male's lower half and the female's upper half. You just weld those together and you have like a full bust right there.
Yeah. More than anything, I think it was just bad taste. But what, you know, why? I don't know why we're talking about this so much. That was like.
It was hilarious, though.
That was a week and a half ago, which is like ancient history and internet, you know, years.
Oh, yeah. But, very, very true, I guess. But we also got those Nintendo goodies. What about that Nintendo Direct, guys?
I was actually shocked that they showed some pretty cool stuff. I mean, I think that there was more excitement in that Nintendo Direct than there was in the last two E3 conferences they've done.
Yeah, better than the last two E3 conferences right there.
Yeah, I think that the message was still a little bit, I don't know, you know, making promises. Like, you know, I promise we're making a new Zelda game. Well, you know, of course you are. You're never going to stop making those.
Yeah, we knew it was going to be. I was really excited with the Wind Waker release. Amazing. They showed it.
It looked early, but I think that, you know, that's kind of I think we talked a little about this earlier this week. You know, I'm usually kind of down on these Japanese companies just kind of going to the well and releasing their classics, you know, in HD when I think they should be making new modern day classics.
But this isn't just a re-release, though. They're updating the graphics, though, and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it seems like they're really going all out, kind of like they did with the Ocarina of Time 3DS. They redid the graphics on that, right?
Oh,
higher polygon.
And, but the same company's doing it for Wind Waker, probably.
Yeah, it looked very early in what they've shown, and I think they even said, you know, this is early, but that's such a gorgeous, timeless game that it would have been a crime not to release that in HD, I think. So, I don't know. I probably won't play it. I could never finish that game. I probably got about 70% into it and just kind of got to kind of like a fetch quest kind of.
I don't think I've ever
sequence where I kind of got bored of it.
A Zelda game because of that sort of thing.
I lose interest. You know, they're great games. Like the first, it seems like the first 10 hours of a Zelda is usually always pretty great, but I really lose interest in it. But I was really, really excited about the new Yoshi game. Did they give that a title, Sean?
I'm just going to call it Yoshi's Epic Land? Yarn. Call it Yoshi's Epic Yarn.
Yeah, because that's what it is, right? It's made by Goodfeel, but they said that it's being produced by the original Yoshi's story guy, right?
Yeah, but I'm still saying that Kirby Epic Yarn played like a Yoshi game anyways.
Right.
That was that very game, Yoshi-like.
You know, I know that game, it kind of caught a lot of crap for being like, you know, a game for small children, really. Just in regards, well, I mean, of course, it's the aesthetic, but it was so easy, you know? Like, I don't even think you died in it, really.
No, not really.
Like, yeah, but you know what? I think, like, I really like Good Feel. They did the Wario Land Shake It on Wii, another game that was pretty easy. Although at the very end on the final boss, it actually gets kind of hard, like to where the difficulty spike is just like goes off the chart, and you're like, what? You know, where was this, you know, for the last 10 hours? But they do really good stuff, like with the graphics, like the stuff they did on Wii with like Epic Yarn and that Wario Land were just like phenomenal, and, you know, them doing something in HD, like,
it looks amazing,
really,
though.
Really, it looks gorgeous, and it looks like from, you know, they only show maybe 10 seconds of actual in-game footage.
And they showed a bunch of screenshots.
Yeah, it looks like the setup, though, it's really interesting and cool. You start out, and you're just kind of a yarn outline of Yoshi, but when you eat, you get another layer of filling and of knitting and stuff, because if you'll notice, if you go back and watch that, like when he keeps eating, the game actually looks like it turns into more of a 3D game. It kind of goes off angle. So,
yeah, you're right. Yeah,
I think they're kind of blending some like either really, really quality 3D geometry stuff or like a blend of 2D, and then it switches into 3D models, which I think is really cool. I'm really looking forward to that.
Is that a system seller for you?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I you know, I was sold when I played, what did I like? Oh, yeah, the Ninja Star game. The castle, what's it called, on
Nintendo Land?
Yeah.
That's what sold me. That is a good game, though.
Yeah, and the Yoshi looks similar to that, the kind of the graphics, but hopefully that's this year. If they're showing it this early, it probably will. But
they also have a new Xenogears, I'm guessing. That's what the RPG was, the Xenogears game. That looks pretty good.
Yeah, is that Monolith that makes that?
Yeah, Monolith, yeah. And I imagine that's probably like a Xenogears game because the way it looks and just kind of plays, I'm thinking.
That talk about good graphics. That looked pretty good.
That looked good. The whole crossing with Fire Emblem and what's the other series that they have? That they're crossing with Fire Emblem Cross, Shin Megami Tensei. That's what it's called.
Okay, I thought that was Atlus that made those.
Yeah, it's a cross. Yeah. It's a cross between an Atlus game and Fire Emblem.
Okay, so that was their other big announcement during the.
Well, they're gonna have Mario Kart, Mario, and Smash Brothers at E3.
Which, why do they even need to bother to say that? I mean, of course that stuff was going to be
just
there.
Let people know because, you know, people were worried. So Nintendo went all out.
Do you think that they're a little bit? Do you think they're kind of going into panic mode that the Wii U isn't really kind of catching the world on fire?
I think it's selling well, but it's not selling to their standards and what they want for it. I don't think they're really panicked because it's still selling. Yeah, it's not selling out like the Wii did. But I don't think they expected another Wii-like, catching fire type thing.
I've heard everything from it's not selling to it's doing okay. Like, I don't really know. But I think they're in panic mode because it didn't sell out. I think it's ridiculous that they would expect it to do Wii levels because that audience isn't there like it was in 2006. And, you know, the economy's a lot worse than it was, so if they're panicking over not doing Wii numbers, I think that's being a little kind of short-sighted.
Yeah, I don't think they're panicking over that. I think they just they want to get the word out, pretty much. I think that's what they're doing. I don't think this is any – because if they're in panic mode, they'd actually show some of these games now instead of saying they'll
get
E3.
They kind of did show a lot for Nintendo Direct, though. I mean, they announce a new Yoshi game. They show a new Zelda, even though it is a remake. So I don't know. I think they may be panicking over the rumblings of the new Xbox, the new PS4, because that they could really get buried at E3 in the press, you know.
Well, you know, they're probably going to do a conference for Sony and Microsoft. Probably gonna do a conference. I think Microsoft's planning one in March sometime.
Yeah, I heard something about that.
Your new system. You're here first, folks. Yeah. So,
but if the company line is just that they're doing okay, you know that they're really panicking, like, behind closed doors.
Yeah. So, John, would you, like, ever be interested in picking one of those up?
It would have to have a exclusive or a couple of exclusive titles that I was really interested in and more, you know, adult-leaning. Because I'm just not the target audience at this point in my life, I don't think, so.
I mean, you were, you know, talking about how the Wii kind of soured you. Like, did you play anything on the Wii? You have one in your house, you know, but...
Yeah, I did. And I got, what was the first Zelda game that came out on the Wii?
Twilight Princess.
Twilight Princess, that was basically just a port of the GameCube version with the exact same graphics. And that really is, like, pissed me off, honestly. It's like, wow.
You just thought that was really tacky of them?
Yeah, I mean, because it had literally the exact same graphics. I was like, oh, okay, it's a new system. It actually had better graphics. But, I mean, basically, in general, the Wii didn't have any better graphics than the GameCube.
I always thought that was really weird that they kind of it was really almost it was like a GameCube port, and I don't even think they even advertised that it was on GameCube, but it did come out.
But in this day and age, to not have HD, just be standard definition, was just disgusting me on, to be honest.
Yeah, a lot of people were saying this should have been last generation's Nintendo console. That's what a lot of people are saying.
Well, it could have been too. I mean, it's in the ballpark of just being a 360, but
a little bit better. But
you know what? It was the Wii was a grand experiment, and I think that it did change the industry totally. And I think you know it worked out well for them. Obviously, I mean, they made billions off of it, literally. So who knows what's gonna happen with this new one? Seems like a pretty neat system, but it does seem like they've kind of screwed up with it, though. Like, there are some pretty big problems with it.
I'm not hoping it fails or anything, but I'm just not personally too interested in it.
I think it's just going to be the next GameCube to where it's there. You know, it has a handful of exclusives that are really, really good, but, you know, not really – it won't have the impact, I don't think, of you know whatever they're going to do with the next 360 or 720 or whatever it's called.
Yeah, like I said, I still have hopes for the system. Yeah, am I going to get probably a 720 or PS4? Yeah, I probably am, but just because there's franchises like on both systems on there, but really, all in all, I'm still a Nintendo diehard fan. This is what I grew up on.
You've got to have your yarn games, you know, your stuff made out of candy.
Yeah, because Nintendo just knows how to do like these fun games, you know, these cartoony, like visually like pleasing games on you. It's not all dark doom and gloom like most of the other system stuff are. Sounds like Little Big Planet and a couple others.
Little Big Planet, even though I guess technically it's kind of a family game, like it looks dingy and ugly and brown.
Like, Nintendo just knows how to make these bright, vibrant games that, you know, I just eat up.
Nintendo will make a game where the sun is always shining, the sky is always blue, and
the world's not always coming. Yeah,
there are always power-ups, you know.
Yeah, guys, so we have a lot coming up. We're trying to do a bunch of different stuff for our community and everything. We're going to have a Twitch TV set up. We're going to play some, like, retro games on that. And eventually, like I said, you don't have the first episode because that's mysteriously banished from the internet unless you want to go try and find it. But we're going to do a drink night one night And, you know, whenever one of us dies, you got to take a drink. For you kiddies out there, make sure you drink. Bring your dew skis and drink some Mountain Dew along with us if you're not over the age of 21. And basically, that's going to be a fun night. We're probably going to, me and Adam are probably going to get sloshed. But
we're
going to
play TMNT and Battletoads all night. So.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough night for us.
May die. Start that up.
We don't have an exact date when we're going to do the drink night, but hopefully the Twitch TV will be up possibly by next weekend, which should be beginning of February's time frame. I plan on getting that set up, and we'll get that rolling out. Me and Adam are going to be taking turns just playing random, you know, retro games. So it should be fun. Other than that, like I said, we'll keep posts. Make sure you subscribe to us on our Podomatic channel. Leave comments. Also, go to RetroWare TV if you want. Leave a comment on there, a nice little comment saying how much you like the show. And, we're just going to keep trying to post these out every weekend. You know, we're going to try and keep doing a show and just keep up to date. So,
yeah,
like I said, make sure you go ahead, Adam.
Don't forget the are we on iTunes?
Yeah, we're on iTunes as well.
Go ahead and do a plug.
Some work to do on our iTunes. Basically, I'm going to have Adam get on there and fix our cover art because I have no idea what I'm doing with RSS feeds. So I'm going to give him the iTunes account and my Gmail account where I got a message from Apple. Let him go on there and fix that for us. So, yeah, I nominated you, Adam. All you, buddy.
Okay.
So, we're on iTunes. Make sure you subscribe on there. And I hope you guys are enjoying what you do. Like I said, leave comments. Let us know what you think. If you have any ideas for topics or whatever, go ahead and shoot us out on shoot us ideas if you want, what you'd like to see on the show, how you would like to progress and everything. So we have a Google Plus community if you all are interested in joining that. So far, the only members is I and I, because Adam has yet to join either on our community.
Sorry.
So, basically, I hope you like what you're seeing. As always, I'm Sean.
I'm Adam.
This is John.
And we'll see you next time on the Game Buddy Funcast. Take it easy, everyone.